Today's episode of Absurdity is sponsored by The Haystack. The Haystack is a voice for young adults in the Seventh-day Adventist Church that produces articles, music reviews, videos, and more. To check them out, go to www.thehaystack.org. The Haystack, life, culture, theology. Everyone, welcome to Absurdity. I've actually thought about saying welcome to the absurdity, but I've also realized that welcome to absurdity works just fine too. I mean, it's called absurdity. We've changed. It used to be called the absurdity. But I really like the idea, like in my head, of like entering the absurd zone.
It's like
welcome to the absurdity. Like you're in the arena now.
Yeah.
You're in the twilight zone.
But we got to say it like, if we do that, we have to do it like Thunderdome. Just welcome to the absurdity.
That's true. Well, now we have a new intro idea.
Well, but my thing is I actually like it when we just say absurdity with Ryan Becker because it kind of reminds me of The Social Network.
Like
drop the Facebook.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can get the guy that does the WWE let's get ready to rumble.
Or we could just that would work.
But like welcome to the absurdity. See how much energy I had there? Do you like how much energy I had there? That was perfect.
It almost feels like we haven't slept all weekend.
Let's probably because we haven't.
We haven't slept all weekend.
This has been crazy. So this is actually cool because Tony, you are here in person.
I am.
Sitting in my apartment. This is the closest to feeling like we have a studio that we've ever felt. I've got our document notes on a giant 55-inch TV.
It's not giant, but
55-inch TV next to us.
It feels huge.
Because we're like 3 feet away.
Because we're like 3 feet away, and I normally read from my iPad, so it's like, okay.
This is really cool. Like, I feel very Joe Rogan-esque right now.
A little bit, but then also like, oh, like we could be doing this for real.
Yeah. No, Tony, you need to just move here so that we can open up a studio.
Don't tempt me.
I would.
Please don't tempt me.
I want to.
And now I have like five more reasons because I've eaten at Urban Sack again, and I'm just like, why did I ever leave this place?
That's what I thought when I came back and had Urban Stack and Taco Mamacita, which we just had, Yellow Deli.
Yellow Deli.
Name it. Like, I love this place. Also, Raphael's, the local, like the pizza joint.
Yes. No.
Has the best fries in Ottawa. I'm pretty sure in the greater Hamilton County area.
This is just a giant plug for the Chattanooga Commerce.
Come live in Chattanooga because Chattanooga rocks.
We got to figure out like a copyrighted phrase like Chattanooga right because you know what's up or something.
I don't know. But copyrighted. There's something. All right. So
only in chat.
When I woke up this morning, we're recording this February 17, and I woke up this morning and I saw a tweet that went out, I think earlier last month. I don't know why it showed up on Twitter today.
Probably somebody retweeted it.
Yeah, I don't know. But okay, so someone tweeted this out. They said, why do Adventists have to act like they're somehow better or more correct than other Christians? Why is there this stigma towards non-Adventist Christian churches? And I loved this because this is something that I've been thinking about a lot. This idea of, within Adventism, I call it Adventist exceptionalism. However, for the purposes of this podcast, I want to talk about it as a larger idea outside of our denomination, because very much so, I think that this mindset, and I agree with the tweet, by the way, just so as I kind of enter this topic, I 100% agree with this tweet. I've watched this happen where we have this idea that the grass is greener on the other side. And we don't only talk about how we think we're better. But this is something that I found that I think it plagues literally everyone. If you believe anything or you don't, or you lack a belief in anything, there is something to be said about what I will call denominational superiority or denominational exceptionalism. You can choose whichever word you want to use there as I almost knocked my laptop off the desk. Or off our like folding table. Yeah,
we're gonna call it a desk.
Denominational.
I believe in
authority.
You, desk.
Thank you. But denominational superiority. This idea that I am better than you because of what denomination I belong to. Hey, I should be a rapper.
Chat first.
But Tony already looks like Post Malone, so I think Tony's the rapper.
Why you gotta go there? Why you gotta? I don't even have long hair anymore.
Anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
You've got the facial structure for it, 100%. You got the goofy smile.
Because
you look like Post Malone pre-tattoo.
You know what? I'm not even that offended because he's a decent art. Like he's a good artist.
He's a great musician. He's just drunk. But all I'm saying, the time.
Great is like change to me. When I say great, I think about like changing. This is going to tie in with denominational superiority, but
you think about changing the game. I think altogether. About
game changing. Yeah, like when you talk about a great athlete, I'm like, okay, there's Pele, there's Gretzky, there. You know what I mean? Like people who they had to change, Shaq, Wilt Chamberlain, people they had to change the game because of how they played.
Okay, fair. But I so when I say Malone, great, so when I say great, I'm saying like an pure exceptionally
enjoyability. Yeah.
No. Not enjoyability. I'm saying just a wonderfully talented artist or talented person.
Yeah, I could.
Post Malone is incredibly talented.
Yeah.
He's just drunk all the time, so you don't really see it. And also he performs to his tracks, like he doesn't lip sync, but like he just plays the actual song, and then just sings along with himself. Every time, like every show, and it's kind of annoying and I hate it. But other than his live performances, he's a super talented musician in general.
I'm really surprised more people don't do that, but here's the reality when we talk about like good versus great and why that ties in. I think every denomination views themselves as great. Because why wouldn't you? You know what I mean? Like your identity is really tied up in what you believe.
I mean, yeah,
and your
absolutely.
Self-worth is tied up in what you believe.
Absolutely. Whether that's political, whether that's religious, whether that's, whatever ideology you hold to.
Whether or not you even believe it yourself or understand it yourself, you're going to stick to your guns and be like, well, I'm right because X, Y, Z.
Well, and even within the case of like, let's say someone deconverts, right? They leave Christianity, become an atheist. There's always that militant atheism stage where your identity is now defined by what you don't believe instead of what you do. And I don't mean like I don't believe in God, but your identity is really formed. And I've watched this happen several times. And I'm not saying everyone becomes a militant atheism because when they are militant atheist when they deconvert. I'm just saying that this happens a lot, where the majority of my conversations, everything in my framework comes around disassociating with that by critiquing it, by criticizing it, whatever. So I'm still letting my old belief system, drive the fullness of my identity as I'm trying to disassociate from it. And I always find that really, really funny to watch play out. I do find it just incredibly interesting because your platform is based off of criticizing the thing that you used to belong to.
So to kind of understand that, let's do our traditional, it's foundation time.
Yeah, so what do we mean when we talk about denominational superiority?
So for me, when we talk about this...
You're wrong.
Basically, what I understand it to mean is basically that I am, my understanding, my belief, my interpretation, my group, my community that I belong to is the best possible version, and yours is inferior in some way
for
some
or
reason.
Form, yeah.
Pardon me. So basically, like, I'm right and you're wrong. The irony being, of course, that I'm right and you're wrong.
Which is funny because this is my podcast and I'm right and you're wrong.
But technically, it's Schrodinger's podcast because until this actually posts.
Hold on.
It is both right and
Schrodinger's
wrong. Yours and mine.
Schrodinger's cat was an experiment to prove how dumb that idea was, and it's turned into now the biggest poster child for, like, it was actually satire. Like, that whole experiment is satire that now we use as, like...
Was it satire?
Yes. Or was it not?
Was it not satire? It was both satire and not satire.
I hate you. That's the exact thing it was fighting against.
It's a bunch of hooey.
No, I agree. So this idea that the community I belong to is better than yours because it is more right, more correct, or it has something that your
community that you lack.
Is missing.
Yeah.
Yes. So this is a natural thing that happens because ultimately, like, if you believe something, if you belong to something, you belong to it because you think it's better than the alternatives, right? Yeah. Like, I drive a Subaru because at the time that I bought my Subaru, I don't necessarily believe this anymore, but I believed that it was better than the other cars within my, within my price range. Same deal with beliefs. I became or decided to stay because I was raised Seventh-day Adventist, but I decided to stay in a Seventh-day Adventist because after looking into my beliefs and looking into the beliefs of others. Now, granted, yes, I didn't look at every single belief system that there is to believe in the world. That's impossible. I decided that, yeah, I think that Adventists have it the most right. It doesn't mean that I believe that we have everything right, but that's why I decided to do this, is because I believe that this was the most right place for me to be.
And I think we have to do a quick disclaimer that this is really a phenomenon that happens within denominations.
Yes.
Most community churches don't experience this. You usually go to that community, that church because it's right where you're at. Like there's reasons beyond like non-denominational churches don't have denominational superiority by definition, because they don't belong to a denomination.
Except that non-denominational basically is a denomination at this point.
Yeah, well, yeah, which is ironic. But so something like Francis Chan's church in California, like a lot of people go to that because they're close by and they enjoy it. Or I know a lot of people who go to certain one-off churches because they're like, there's nothing really better about it. It's close by and it's the best worship service or community or something like that. Like, it's not better than anybody else. It's just my thing. Like, I enjoy it the most. So this is more something that we've seen along actual denominations that have a creed and that kind of stuff.
Well, okay. But let me clarify something here, because I'm not saying that simply belonging to the thing that you think is the most right is the problem.
No,
superiority.
It's the attitude.
It is the belief that because you are the most right, you are better than anyone else.
Right.
That is denominational superiority, right? Or exceptionalism, that you are the exception. You are exceptional. You are better than others. And it's kind of the same kind of belief that racism is rooted in, right? This idea that because I am this color, I am better than you.
The difference between racism and prejudice is prejudice assumes somebody else is worse than you because they are different than you. It doesn't even matter about the race. It can be about ageism. It can be like anything. Racism is specifically you are less than me because of the color of your skin.
Yeah, your ethnicity,
because of your tribe, wherever you're from. Like, you are worse than me because of that. That's the difference, and that's kind of what it is. Like, well, the even better experience I've seen with this is in sports. Like, there are people who enjoy, like, root for a team, and then there are fans, and you see this a lot in soccer, right? Like in American. Especially Americans who are Premier League fans, like you and I are both Premier League fans. You're a fan of Chelsea. I'm a fan of Liverpool. It's not enough. Like in England, they don't just root for their team. They actively want your team to burn
to the ground
and cry. Yeah. Like, it's not enough for me to win. You have to lose.
Yeah.
But over here, a lot of times you'll have people like, oh, you know, I really like this team, and they don't really care. Not that they don't really care, but it's like, well, if the other teams do well, they do well. I just want my team to win. Like, I just like rooting for my team. And you'll see this a lot of times, you know, with casual observers or casual supporters of certain teams in sports. And you'll get this a lot.
And you see it in like, oh, I'm from California, and yeah, Californians so I are guess better I root than you. For... well, no, I mean, not even just teams. Like, I believe that where I'm from is better than you because of where I'm from. Like, California is better than you. Or, you know, I'm from Florida. I can't really say that about anyone. So, because we have Florida Man. So there is no hope for Florida.
Or Florida Headlines. Oh my gosh.
Florida Headlines are
That's
the most.
Another sub.
If you want something to do with your friends on Saturday night, just look up Florida Man Headlines.
It's scary.
And
every time I see one, I also ask like you or Steve, like, is this accurate? And just every time, just not even a hesitation, just yes.
Yeah, that sounds like
That's
Tuesday.
Believable. Yeah.
Like, man, like,
I think I know that guy.
I remember the Walmart near my house got in the headlines because an alligator walked into chilled in the entrance of Walmart, and they had to call the cops and no one knew what to do. And animal control had to come out and they had to like remove this gator from a Walmart.
So,
like, and this is like a Walmart that I frequented back home.
So have you heard the joke? A gator walks into the bar. Bartender says, "Well, you have." Gator immediately attacks one of the patrons because it is a wild animal.
Yeah, exactly. Literally. Yeah. So that was about as funny as every joke I ever tell. So we're really consistent with our levels of humor across the hosts of this podcast.
I'm not even going to argue with you on that.
That's good. You shouldn't.
Fairly.
So
accurate.
I think we have experienced this a lot, though. I know I have.
Yeah.
Well, and I can watch it. All right. Let me be clear. While this is true across every denomination, right? I think the main lens that Tony and I talk about this through or look at this through is through our experience with Adventism.
Well, that's because it's what we've...
It's our worldview.
That's our particular journey, but everyone can kind of...
If you're listening to our stories, think of perhaps some stories in your faith
that
might echo the sentiment. So I can give...
Jewish, Islam...
Yeah, whatever.
Like, it happens everywhere.
So Adventism crops up in the 1800s. With his belief, with interpretations of Daniel and Revelation, and this idea that we are going to go back to the original way that the Bible was meant to be kept by keeping the seventh day Sabbath, was kind of the cornerstone of that.
So by letting the Bible interpret itself, and the first real thing that came out of that was the seventh day Sabbath, like the discovery of that.
And so the message became in the late 1800s, 1900s, and even up to today, the message has become that the other denominations have been doing it wrong. We are doing it right because we are keeping the seventh day Sabbath. And so those other denominations, if they're not doing it right, we can't listen to them. They don't have the full truth. Yeah. They don't have present truth. They don't have the light.
What can they add to us?
When we're more correct than them? And so this is absolutely played into this idea that we are better than them because we have the truth. And so we don't listen a lot of times. And I say we kind of collectively. This is not true of every individual. There are Adventists that are listening to that. I don't do that. Okay, I'm not talking about you then. Congratulations.
But I think everyone is willing to acknowledge they've at least seen it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think in every congregation they've seen it. I had, when I was pastoring, a couple times with members in leadership positions where they would say things. I mean, I had one guy that actually said, one individual, I should keep it gender neutral, who actually said, inferred, they didn't directly say, but they strongly inferred, substituted pronouns kind of a thing, where if you're not Adventist, you're an abomination to the Lord kind of a thing. And luckily, a few people with me kind of shut him down and were like, yeah, that's not at all what the Bible says. But I'm like, that everyone, I think if they're being truly honest with themselves, everybody has had something like that, a moment like that, where somebody looked at somebody else and was like, ugh, and they just kind of rolled their eyes and like, well, at least we're not insert name here.
Well, and I've seen it happen from the church standpoint too, like the local church standpoint of members going, I don't want the people from outside coming into this church until they're more like us.
Yeah.
I feel
that's the danger of it.
Yeah. And I've watched that attitude happen. This idea, we have it right, until they become more like us, they aren't welcome here because they're not doing it right. And, you know, they're putting me at risk because of how wrong they are.
It really skews your motivation, too. I think I've shared this on the podcast before. By the way, I love the fact that our banter actually works because we're not having a delay over Google Chrome. This is
Google
great.
Hangouts? Yes,
Google Hangouts, yes.
Yeah, we're not interrupting each other.
It's great.
Except for right now.
But yeah, no, I saw this one time. I went to a big convention. And at this convention, they were bringing up examples of people and literally bringing people up on the stage. They'd be like, isn't it so excited? They were, I'm just going to use it as an example. I don't remember specifics, but they were a Methodist and now they're an Adventist. Oh, they were a non-denominational, now they're Adventist. And I was like, shouldn't we be saying, and I'm not saying that they weren't, but I'm saying, shouldn't we be excited that a child who was lost is now found? Like, shouldn't that be what we were excited? That one of the one sheep that we went out and found someone who was lost, and now they found Christ. And yeah, I mean, it happened to be throughout. Like, to me, it's not even that slight of a change, but it's a huge shift in perception, because it's like, it's not just that, oh, well, they already believed, but they didn't believe right enough. It was like, this person didn't have a relationship with Jesus Christ, and now they do. That's what we should be excited about every single time. And I'm not saying that Adventists do this every single time or more. I'm just saying that was the particular attitude they had, and it represented to me that exceptionalism, and that's the danger of it, that, well, you're not really saved.
Yeah, exactly. Your relationship with Jesus and you knowing and accepting Jesus is not enough.
Yeah.
You also need to be evangelical, Adventist, Baptist, Southern Baptist, whatever, right? You have to be a part of our tribe to have your relationship with Jesus save you. Only your relationship with Jesus filtered through this set of beliefs is what will save you.
I'm going to use big words. Big word warning. unless your Christology and your soteriology match mine, you cannot be saved.
Yeah. So your beliefs about Christ,
unless your beliefs about Christ and unless your beliefs about salvation mirror mine, you cannot be saved. And it's like, well, I mean, I think there are some degrees to that, but for the most part, no.
Functionally, salvation works the same.
Functionally, salvation works. Yeah, exactly. It works kind of the same. And it's very basic. I think when we add a lot of details to it, we tend to get lost in the forest of the trees. I mean, there's some people that there's some beliefs that take it so far beyond the pale that I'm like, okay, I can kind of see an argument from that standpoint. But the majority of Christianity has virtually the same
Well, and we've done
basic beliefs when you boil it down.
I think there's another angle to this too. I think another reason we participate in denominational superiority is fear, right? If I've given my entire life to Adventism, I don't want to be wrong. And if I don't want to be wrong, then there have been times where I've been afraid to read books about evolution, to read books about other belief systems, because I'm thinking in the back of my mind, there's this fear that crops up of what if I'm wrong and now I have to change everything that I've ever known? Because if I leave Adventism, I leave friends, I leave family, I leave careers, I have a useless degree.
Yeah.
I leave everything that I've known to be true about both God and myself and my world around me. That's scary. And so there's this fear that drives us to shun everything else, to throw up the walls and make our faith a citadel that does not allow for questions to come in, because those questions might tear at the fabric of what we know to be true or what we regard to be true. And so this is actually fear, because if I believe that I'm better than you, I don't need to listen to you. Why do I care about what you have to say if I already know that I'm better than you because I'm more right or I have truth that you don't have?
Well, I think a better way of saying that is if I know better than you, then anything you say that might perhaps cause me to grow and question my faith, I can disregard.
Yeah, it's dangerous.
Even if what you say is true and the Holy Spirit might be trying to use you to speak to me, I can disregard it because, well, I mean, you're not. And we've talked about this before. I find God in everyday life, in secular things. I watched Into the Spider-Verse, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I saw parts of, I will totally admit that this was not the intention of the makers.
Movie. Yeah,
but I saw parts of the Christian story in there. You know, self-sacrifice and I won't get into all of it, but I saw the in there and I was like, oh man, I could totally make a sermon out of this, because I saw things that connected to that and just. And I'm not saying that this happens to everybody. This is my particular journey, but I love watching stuff like that because I get it out of there. But God can't speak to me if I'm not willing to open up and say, and obviously this is a different thing, but I'm like, if let's just say, I don't even know, Craig Rochelle, just because he's not my denomination, he can't say anything right.
Well, yeah.
That's ridiculous. Like he might be saying something that's incredibly good, incredibly beautiful and strong and teaches me something new about Christ. But if I'm not open to that, I'm going to miss out on something that God has to show me.
Well, and that's what's so funny. There have been times, and I know this is true for others too. There have been times, because I did this as an experiment, where I simply repackaged the biblical teaching of a non-Adventist pastor, preached it, obviously through my own, like I said, I repackaged. So not plagiarizing, I still filtered it through my own writing, but the core idea was something that came or that I learned about initially from a non-Adventist pastor. Would preach it in my church, talk about it on a podcast, wherever, and Adventists would go, yes, amen.
That's us. That's Adventism.
Yeah, that's us. Oh man, you're such a good Adventist speaker. I'm like, if only you knew. But if they had heard that out of the mouth of someone like Andy Stanley, Louis Giglio, Craig Rochelle, they would have rejected it
immediately out of hand
by virtue of where it came from. And so just because if you're willing to accept a message simply because it came from Adventist, there's as many different types of Adventists as there are different types of Christians. Like, and I know that like logically there's a numbers issue there, like there's a math issue with that statement, but you get what I mean.
I mean, spectrum wise, no, I think it's really true. I mean,
the spectrum is as wide
as wide as basic Christianity. I would say that we are perhaps still more on the conservative.
Oh, the most
side
liberal Adventist is a conservative evangelical.
I would say, yeah, no, the spectrum is as wide as at least anything else in Christianity.
Yeah.
But again, like, I think that's why it makes it kind of difficult when we try to get together and talk about something as a group. Because again, it gets into, and it begs the question, we've been talking about this a little bit, you know, at what point do you consider yourself an Adventist? You know, where do you draw the line of, well, you can believe X amount of things and still be Adventist, but if you only have 13 of the 28, well, then you're not really an Adventist.
Well, I think...
That's a rabbit hole we don't need to go down.
Right now,
but,
yeah.
But
we will revisit that, absolutely.
Yeah, but the reality is, like, that's the question that you have to start asking if you start...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you go down that idea of only this can be true. I go back to the phrase present truth, right? When you hear present truth, what do you think of? Not like... Take away, like, unlearn all that you have learned. When you just hear that phrase, what does it sound like?
I'm going to be 100% honest with you. The first place that my mind went when you said that was the Key and Peele substitute teacher skit,
yeah,
where he goes, present. that is the first. That is, Aaron, that is the first.
You done messed up, Balake. No.
That is.
All right,
that
so when you hear present truth, like, what does it sound like to you?
I don't know. Like, our current interpretation of... Or the current fullness of our expression of belief.
Something that's coming up. Yeah. Something that's new and fresh, and this is truth as it is presently. Just our interpretation of that phrase can be so different in the Adventist Church. Forget Christianity.
Are you present truth, Tony?
Well, that's the thing, is you have present truthers in our church. And those of you who don't know, like, do a little research on it. Like, and I'm not knocking present truthers, but I'm saying for some people, present truth is past truth. And by definition, they don't believe in present truth, but they call it, this is present truth.
If someone asks me, are you present truth? It's a red flag.
Yeah. And I'm like, what do you mean by that? Because to me, present truth is truth that is presently here. Mm-hmm. And it's truth from the past, but it's also truth that we're continuing to learn.
Yeah.
And it's a movement. It's much more fluid and not flexible, but what's the elastic? It's much more elastic, mm-hmm. Like the brain. Like, we're learning about, you know, our neurons and how you can regrow and grow new places. That's how present truth ought to be. But our interpretation of that is so wide. And some people will say, well, if you don't believe just that phrase the same way I do, you're not truly Adventist. Yeah.
When I think of present truth, I think of, let's say, the Sabbath, right? We've talked about the Sabbath, where the original teaching of the Sabbath within Adventism was this is the biblically correct way of doing it. And for a group of people, for a society that valued the truth of the objective truth of Scripture, awesome. That was great. They wanted to follow what was biblically true. That value is not the same now in today's society. And when I think of present truth in the Sabbath, I think of the Sabbath being presented now not just as a biblically correct model, but also as something that is completely countercultural to the rush and busyness of society, that gives you the opportunity to rest, to recover, to regroup, to spend intentional time with your family and invest in your own health and and that idea of Sabbath is very much
as a personal growth
and it's present
value.
Truth.
Yeah.
And it's present truth. And obviously God is within that framework for sure, but like that's present truth. It's the idea that it's bringing
understanding more of the core concept, like
absolutely.
Growing in our understanding of a concept and bringing new, whether to an old concept or even bringing in a new concept into the, you know what I mean? Introducing a new character into the mix. And I think, well, you were telling me about a tweet from Rachel Held Evans, who is, I want to say, an evangelical?
Yes. Well, sort of. She sort of identifies that
mainstream
way.
I mean, evangelical is such a broad term. Yeah. That's like saying I'm
a Christian.
White. Like, that can encompass, like, Scandinavian, Germanic. Like,
which,
that...
to be fair, along the races, I meant to bring this up earlier before I bring up this Rachel Held Evans quote. Propaganda was on Southern's campus a few weeks ago, and he brought up the point that
he's a rapper.
He's a, yes, a not,
or,
not,
or spoken word artist.
No, he's a rapper.
Okay, he's a
rapper. He's a hip-hop artist, straight up.
Yeah. Okay,
and
okay.
He's from L.A. His wife has a PhD in, not sociology, but something along those lines. Dude's smart, wife's smart, everyone's smart in that family. They're cool guys. They're They're cool people. But Propaganda brought up the point in a talk to Southern students, and he was basically like, look, white people didn't even like each different other. Kinds yeah. of white people prior to America. Now white is this big classification, but like he literally was like, people on the southern part of the island didn't like people on the northern part of the island, even though they're living on the same island, just because they were from the north part of the island, they didn't like them. Like that is how crazy denominational superiority racism is. It's this idea that just because of who I am,
yeah.
I'm better than you or where I'm from, whatever.
People forget, like, there was a huge, huge disparity. People hated Irish people. That's why
yes.
they had the Irish, they hated Jews, they hated Italians, they hated anybody. Now they're all white. So it's like, oh, well, now we can all join together. And it's like, no. You didn't even like those type of people who were right next to you because they yep. did not have the same size eyebrows as you. And mm-hmm. you were like, oh, you suck and I'm going to kill you now.
Yes, exactly. So Rachel Held Evans, I found this tweet in 2017. So that's how long I've been thinking about this topic, just so we're clear. Not like every day it consumes me, but this is actually the Twitter thread.
As I lie in bed and stare at the ceiling, slowly allowing the darkness to descend on me.
Yeah, Rachel Held Evans, she's an author in the evangelical sector. She recently wrote the book Inspired, which is an incredible book.
Very good, yeah.
But on the 20th of December in 2017, she tweeted something in response to recent articles from Tim Keller, Ed Stetzer, and Beth Moore, and more. And she's basically critiquing their response to the state of a current American evangelicalism. And she says, we've seen a lot of reflective pieces from evangelical leaders attempting to consider/explain the white evangelical alliance with Trump, Moore, Bannon, and white nationalism. I appreciate that many are concerned about this alliance, but it bothers me that so many of their pieces attempt to downplay or explain it away by questioning the statistics. So she keeps talking, and she's referencing some specific stuff, and she says, so I think I finally figured out what all of this is about. In other words, the attempt to explain the alliance of evangelicals to Trump.
Justify it, but even like, well, this is why this happened.
They're just trying to say. She said, so I think I finally figured out what this is about. Let's call it, and Adventists in the room that think that Adventists are the only ones that deal with this, let this be a lesson right now, because this rocked me. This is what opened my eyes to it.
That's mostly sugar.
She said, so I think I finally figured out what this is about. Let's call it evangelical exceptionalism. And if you just Google Rachel Held Evans, evangelical exceptionalism, this tweet pops up immediately. And I'll put a link to it in the show notes. She says, I'm familiar with evangelical exceptionalism because I grew up with it. It was the idea that the quote-unquote world or culture is secular, dark, and lost. Only evangelical Christians, not Catholics, not mainline Protestants, carry the light. Many white evangelicals believe the world is affected by racism, greed, sexual immorality, and idolatry. But evangelical Christians are not. The world is lost. Evangelicals know the way. The world has questions. Evangelicals have the answers. And so there is an unwillingness, I'm still quoting here, I'm still reading this Twitter thread. And so there is an unwillingness to among many evangelicals to admit something's wrong here. Evangelical culture has been profoundly affected by racism, religious nationalism, individualism, greed, etc. They can't admit that because they believe themselves to be exceptional. If I change the word evangelical for Adventist in all of that, it is just as true.
Oh, yeah.
Just as true.
If you lined those two up and just swapped the words out, nobody would know the difference.
Yep. So and she goes on to bring out some notable exceptions, especially evangelical women who are pointing out a lot of the same things that she's pointing out here. She says the truly prophetic voices in evangelicalism right now are not the ones explaining Trump evangelical alliance away, but the ones calling for repentance. The ones that are calling out and saying we've been doing it wrong. So Rachel Held Evans is doing this self-awareness, right? That's what she's doing here, is this idea of self-awareness to say, no, the problem is intrinsic with us. We are not actually better than anyone else. And the belief that we are has made us blind to our own problems. And this, or at least blind to the root of our own problems. Because there's a lot of people in Adventism that will say there's something wrong here, sure. But they'll say that the wrongness is coming only from the other side. There is a... I'm someone who believes...
Hey, let me get the speck out of your eye.
Yeah. I believe that women's ordination is... I mean, aside from the fact that ordination itself is an odd thing, I believe that women should be ordained within the current system. Absolutely. But that doesn't mean that I excuse every single behavior from someone who identifies the same way I do on that belief spectrum. The behaviors of many who support the ordination of women have been abhorrent.
And I'm not saying every single woman deserves to be ordained either.
Correct.
Or a man.
Yeah,
I mean,
correct.
Again, I go back to I don't think anyone should be ordained because that's old. But yeah, yes. Like... I'm not saying that
ordination as a system should be revisited, but as long as this system exists,
and even if we were, I'm not even saying that every woman deserves. I'm like, you have to do that on the base because some people don't like they've acted in a way that tells me no,
yeah,
no.
And so this is so, and in the same way, I could look at those who are anti women's ordination, and I can say, you have every right to believe the way you do, and some of your behaviors have been abhorrent and repulsive and gross as well. In fact, I can think of one specific reference, and this actually wasn't about women's ordination, but it was about something else. An article I read recently where someone had died, a prominent figure had died recently, not one of, like, not an evangelist or someone, but someone more involved in the healthcare side of things. And one website wrote basically at the top of their, they wrote an article stating he'd passed away. And the top of the article basically said, so-and-so passed away. Here's the address for the viewing. Here's the time. Our deepest condolences to the family. And then what followed is that one paragraph is probably 6 lines long. It takes you, what, 20 seconds to read? If like 10 seconds to read, right? Then what follows is an article that probably will take you 20 to 30 minutes to read about all the terrible, horrible things he did against Adventism that were dangerous to Adventism as an Adventist. And I'm just like, are you, like, that's not okay. That's not okay. Like, you don't get to say our deepest condolences to the family and then proceed to completely assassinate this man's character when he's not even alive to defend himself anymore.
I mean, you can.
Yeah.
As they clearly did.
But it's not
but
right.
It's not. Yeah. It's like, way, wow, all right. So that tells me a lot more about you than.
And in the same way, I've watched those on the pro women's ordination side or a more progressive view, I've watched them assassinate the characters of those on the far side. I've watched people say you need to get lost. I've seen prominent figures in Adventism say to a room full of people that believe that women shouldn't be ordained earnestly. I've watched them say to that room, this is going to happen. We're just waiting for you to die off. Right? That's not okay. I'm trying to be fair here as much as possible, but this belief that just because you identify one way or your beliefs are one way does not make you better than anyone else. And the idea that you are better than anyone else will make you blind to your own problems. Absolutely. It's the log in your eye. It's a speck in your brother's eye instead of the log in your own. Absolutely. I think that's the root of the denominational superiority argument.
You know, I see a lot of parallels to, time of Christ, you know, just so much. Because the Pharisees were the good believers back then. And people weren't as good as those believers back then. If you didn't follow the traditions to the exact way that I have, you can't get into heaven. That's literally what Phariseeism was all about. Over the 600, et cetera, blah, 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 laws. And there's a lot of that's been out there about that. If you haven't read up on that, I mean, just do it's way beyond the pale.
Yeah.
But it's a perfect example. Like, as much as things change, I mean, Solomon knew what he was doing. Nothing's changed. Nothing new under the sun. Like, it's time. Time is concentric flat circles. It's just us doing the same thing over again, but forgetting that we have done it in the past. Like, every third generation is like, okay, well, let's make the same mistakes. And I think, I think one of the things that you have to ask when it comes to this is, okay, well, if you don't believe that you are completely right, why do you even join? Like, why are you even a part of something if you don't believe that it is the best thing to join? And I think that's a fair question.
Yeah, but there's a difference.
Right.
There's like a key difference between believing that this is the most right place to be and I'm better than you because I'm in the most right place to be.
That's okay. So you literally cut me off of the past. So the example, good. That the answer I would have to that, why would you cut me off? Sugar.
No,
sick
I'm
him.
Sorry. I'm sorry, friend.
So she jumped up at that. To me, I would go back to the Pharisee and the tax collector, right? Tax collector is committing sin. He is stealing from people, right? This is inferred in the story, right? Because tax collectors, back in the day, if you don't know kind of the story about tax collectors, they would basically pay a fee to the Roman government for the right to collect taxes. And then they basically got to do whatever they wanted. They basically could collect as many taxes as much as they wanted, as high a percentage as they wanted, as long as it didn't result in like crazy revolution, like people, you know, starting revolutions.
Yeah.
So you had quite a bit of leeway. And so tax collectors were known for basically being extortioners and, you know, similar like to the mafia. And what's crazy is you have the story of the tax collector and the Pharisee. The tax collector is a sinner, right? The Pharisee, by just, again, we're going to assume that the Pharisee isn't actively sinning, and that's inferred in the story, is that he is not, that the things that he is saying are true. When he comes in and he prays this prayer, he was like, God, thank you so much that I'm not like other men. I'm not like this tax collector over here. I pray every day. I fast, you know, multiple times a week.
Yeah, and he's being honest. He's being as honest as he can.
And the inference is that all these things are true.
Yes.
That he actually does, in fact, do these things and live his life in this manner. And the Pharisee comes in, and or the tax collector comes in and goes, God, forgive me, a sinner. The inference here is not that one is better than the other, but rather that one actually receives salvation. Because one acknowledged the fact that under God, all of us have sinned and fallen short. Mm-hmm. And to me, I go back to when we talk about denominational superiority, I go back to the reality of all have sinned and fallen short. Paul didn't say, well, we see darkly, you know, as in a mirror, but Adventists like totally don't even see darkly. Like that's mostly Catholics see darkly, but Adventists see clearly. It's like, no, if you have light, you have more responsibility. And it goes back to the concept of what leadership is in the Bible. Leadership in the Bible meant more responsibility and you were held to a higher standard. It didn't mean you were better than everyone else. It meant you had a harder life. Look at prophets.
And that's if I look at scripture and I think of the idea of you're a light in a city on a hill.
Yeah.
Right? The point of being a light, a lit city on a hill, is that others out in the darkness will see that light,
and, see be that light and be drawn to it.
So if you believe that you're better than them, then as they get drawn to it, you go, no. Yeah. This is
literally
this
the, is, you this put is, a bushel over yeah, and like, no, I don't want anyone else
is,
to have this.
This is my light. You don't get this because you're not like me. This is what led to the idea that, you know, Israel being God's chosen people, Samaritans not God's chosen people, Samaritans therefore suck.
Bad.
Yeah. Yeah. This is you know, or Gentiles as well, Jews and versus Gentiles.
Yeah.
And within Adventism, the framework of Seventh-day Adventism, it's remnant versus non-remnant. That is absolutely the case, and it is dangerous.
Different wallpaper, same building.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this and going, yes, then just I'm grateful that we've been able to say something that you can identify with. Maybe we've said something that you've been feeling for years and have been able to express it well. Great. Maybe we've given you language to express the stuff in your heart that you've been feeling. Great. But if you listen to this and you think, yes, that's exactly the problem. Those people.
Yeah, no, we're talking about us.
We're talking about us.
Yep.
So please understand that if you're listening, go, yeah, that's what, you know, those people. If you think you're better than someone else because you don't think you're better than someone else.
You are now the problem.
You are now the problem. Yep. Like that's literally, the point is not that the people who believe that they're better than someone else are the problem. The problem is that I think I'm better than anyone else.
Yeah.
And that I automatically have a tendency to fall into that trap.
It's human tendency.
It's absolutely human tendency.
It's very human. And the reality is like, we're all on a journey. That's the truth. To me, that's how you get out of it. Like that's how you get out of it is by sitting and looking at oneself and discovering, what is it that God's trying to tell me? What is it that God's trying to reveal to me to help me learn and grow closer to him and becoming self-aware of my weaknesses? And the reality is, like, one of the fruits of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, you know, humbleness.
Yeah.
When you become humble, when you understand what God did, like Paul even describes it. He's like, I am the chief of sinners. And he wasn't saying that metaphorically.
And he wasn't fishing for compliments.
He wasn't fishing for compliments or humble bragging.
No, Paul, you're great.
He literally meant that. He's like, no. I am the worst of them. Let me tell you why.
Christians.
Yeah, like I am the chief of sinners, which is why I am so grateful, because to whom much has been forgiven, much is appreciated. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Much more is appreciated. And he goes, I am the chief of sinners, even still. By the way, he wasn't referring to his past sins. He was referring to his present condition.
Yes.
Now, obviously, he wasn't sinning again, but he goes, because of who I know I am outside of Christ. To me, that's always the question I have to ask. Yep. And this is something that I've always told myself, never forget this. Without Jesus in my life, I know exactly who I would be.
Yeah.
If Jesus was not in my life, I know exactly who I would be. And I never forget that. And I pray that he never allows me to forget that.
Yeah.
And a lot of people do. A lot of people forget. But for the grace of God, mm-hmm. there go I.
Well, I think there's another solution to this too. And that is by actively looking for the imago Dei, or actively looking for the image of God in other people, the image-bearing qualities in other people that don't walk, think, and talk like you. The fact that you can walk around in your denomination and never talk to a single person outside of your faith, or know how to talk to a single person outside of your faith, is dangerous. And it's scary, because it entrenches that better attitude in you, like that I'm better and that superiority in you. Whereas if you're actively looking, like you want to know the struggle of an LGBTQ person, go get to know one and look for the image-bearing qualities of God in them. Remember, God is love. We love because God first loved us. Anyone who loves is exhibiting a God image, or an image of God trait, an image-bearing trait. This is that's just absolutely true. Looking for the good in other people and the things that level you, that's what's great. Now, here is the danger. It is very easy, and I watch this happen all the time. See, I go out and I have those friends, and I am in community with people that are different from me, and I don't believe I'm better than them. It's the people that don't have that community that are the problem. Okay, congratulations. You are now participating. You see how easy it is to fall into this trap?
Yeah.
Like, it's so easy, even in doing the correct things, to then say, like, that's the idea. You're doing something more right, and you suddenly begin to believe that the thing you're doing right is what makes you better.
Yeah.
And that's not sustainable.
I'm going to give a quick disclaimer before I go into this thing. I 100% believe that the Seventh-day Adventist Church, for me, has the most light.
I would agree with that. I wouldn't be here if I didn't.
Now, I believe it's also, and we've talked about this before, it's a mentality and a mindset and a way of reading the Bible. It's a movement, not an organization, that I subscribe to. And I believe the organization is aligned with that movement currently. I don't know if that's going to change in the future, but right now, Seventh-day Adventist organization and Seventh-day Adventist movement are one and the same, effectively.
Yes.
For all intents and purposes, they're the same. However, I love the description in The Horse and His Boy that Aslan gives. At one point, the main character asks what happened to one of the other main characters, and Aslan goes, basically, he tells him, don't worry about that. Like, I told them their own journey. You focus on your journey. Like, I'm not going to share. You focus on you. Don't worry about them. I'll deal with them. You focus on you. And I'm paraphrasing there. But I, even as a kid, and I read that, I was probably 7, 8 when I first read that, and it struck me. And it's something that has stayed with me my entire life, because it's so true. So many times we act just like that Pharisee and go, oh, thank God I'm not like them.
Yep.
Because I go out and hang out with the LGBTQ community, or I do evangelism, or I actually, you know, I stay true to the Seventh-day Adventist traditions.
Or the classic racist, the anti-racist. I have friends that are black, I'm not racist. Yeah, I'm not like them.
I'm not like those people. And instead of looking at oneself and saying, I don't care about them, I care about me. Mm-hmm. I do. God will deal with them. God, for good or bad, God's going to deal with those quote-unquote people. But again, the problem is God has called us to reach those people.
Yep.
Jesus didn't just reach the secular lost for that. He came to also reach the religious lost. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And so I always want to make sure that when I am looking and trying to observe and trying to love people, that I'm looking up both ends and I am associating myself. I am associating myself with anyone who disagrees with me or anyone who doesn't see it from my side, on the right, on the left, up, down, red and yellow, black and white, all are precious in his sight. When I can do that and when I can find the humanity in everyone, like you were talking about, find that imago Dei, then we can start to believe we are right without believing we're better.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it goes back to like with much, here's Spider-Man again, with great power comes great responsibility. With great light comes great responsibility. Because I believe I have more light, it is my job to share that. But the reality is, and some people might disagree with me on this, and I'm going to take a bit of a, maybe a little
bit
of a controversial
stance. Well,
don't
worry, you're better than them if you do.
They're the problem. I have seen some non-Adventists truly have better biblical and how do I say this? Christ understanding,
Christ likeness,
Christ, not Christ likeness, but Christ, like understanding of the character of Christ.
Okay. Yeah.
Then I'd write, like I have heard some of this stuff and I go, that's the Jesus of the Bible. And then I went to church that week and I heard something that was completely against the Jesus of the Bible, but sounded 100% Adventist.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Adventism too, the way that I kind of describe Adventism is like the gospel, looking at the gospel through a magnifying glass. Like we get to see into the details of the gospel. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of explanation for in Adventism for how that salvation works and like physically what's going on. And it's beautiful. But sometimes you can get so bogged down by, you miss the forest for the trees. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
You miss the forest for the, you're so caught up looking at the trees that you miss the bigger, simple picture that you are just within this beautiful plan enacted by God to save and be in relationship with his people and his creation.
You're so busy looking at the various parts of the sanctuary, you forget the God who is currently in the sanctuary.
Yeah, and you forget
like
the purpose
Jesus
of the sanctuary.
Jesus, move out of the way. I got to stay at the menorah. Like,
yeah, exactly. That and so it's dangerous. It absolutely is dangerous. And it's so easy for all of us to fall into it. Even the people criticizing those who believe they're better than someone else.
That would be us.
That would be us. I feel like this is deja vu, right? I'm having major deja vu in this exact moment.
But I think it's also important that we do kind of hype on it a little bit. And
yeah. I think, yeah, we're not better than anyone else. Absolutely not.
I'm definitely better than you.
And Luke is better than both of us.
Yeah,
Luke
this
Steen
is true.
Because the only L
that's
in Luke Steen's
man.
Life is the one at the beginning of his name.
That is a beautiful, beautiful
he is
man.
A beautiful man.
Inside and out.
Now this is the true test on whether he listens to this podcast.
Yeah, that's
not.
Exactly
that's
it.
That's what this is.
Does he
is.
Listen to the bitter end?
Well, stay tuned for the next episode of Dragon Ball Z to find out if Luke listens to absurdity.
We need to start adding like at the very end, like trivia notes and just be like, and if you say the letter, you know, Q.
The first person to tweet me.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. I think it's really important for us to always be self-aware, to be a part of a community also. And remember, I've said this before, everything I say is predicated on the idea that you are surrounding yourself in a biblical community that will call you and hold you to accountability when you won't hold yourself there. These are people that you've given explicit permission to call you out and to hold you accountable to the things that you aren't holding yourself accountable to. Even if that means that you are acting in a way that says, I'm better than anyone else. That's what that community is there for.
And that community can be bigger than the Adventist church itself.
Absolutely. Jesus' entire community, obviously the disciples bearing, but the people that Jesus actively sought to spend time with were people that did not think the way he did. Just saying. And I guarantee you that everyone that Jesus walked around did not end up believing the same way he did. Just go ahead and read John 6 real quick. John 6, where he preaches, after he feeds like 10,000 people, the number in the Bible is 5,000, women and children not physically counted in that, so closer to 10,000. They follow him to the other side of the lake, expecting him to feed them or do more miracles, and he goes, that's not like, the point is not the food and the miracles, the point is me, and and salvation and believing in the one who saves. And they go, oh, we just are here for the free food. We're going to leave. And then he looks at his disciples who are staying around and he goes, hey, you guys are going to leave too? Yeah. And they go, where do we have to go? But literally 10,000 people leave him.
No, we're out.
Yeah. No, the people that Jesus spent time with were not always people that ended up believing the same way as him, walking the same way with him, or otherwise. And so this is something that is really important for us, I think, to keep in mind and to always be looking at ourselves and thinking, in what area of my life do I believe I'm better than someone else? Because if that's the case, I will always behave in fear. And I'm talking about me. I will always behave in fear that they might become better than me. And every action I take will be with the intent to make sure they never become better than me, to limit them. So male headship, if I believe that men have this better role or bigger role than women, everything I do will make sure that they never get to be bigger or better than me. And equality is seen as bigger and better than me. If you get the roles that I do, suddenly my stature, my position in society is threatened. This is true with our threatened masculinity episode that we just did a couple of weeks ago. A72, I believe, is threatened masculinity. I mean, it's just the case where if everything you do will be out of this fear that your relevancy will be threatened by someone else having it more right than you. And it's just, we can't love people if we're doing that. We can't love people if we're operating in that framework.
I think that's ultimately the biggest danger. I mean, we talked about some specific dangers that you can fall into, but ultimately you will stop loving other people. You'll stop loving the people that Jesus commanded us to love if you do that. It took years for the disciples to break their mentality and take the gospel. It took somebody who had to be completely broken down in Paul, like stripped down to his core as a person, for the Gentiles to finally get an advocate.
Yep.
And that is the ultimate danger, is that Christ's final commandment to his disciples, or to his apostles, but disciples too, is I want you to love each other and other people the way that I loved you. Mm-hmm. Please do this. I'm about to die. I don't know if I'm coming back. If you forget everything else, love other people. And when we think we can justify not loving other people and not letting other people speak into our lives, and not letting God speak into our lives through other people, when we think we are better.
Yep. Well, and I think even Peter is a man considered so close to God, so reflecting the image of God and what he did, his shadow could heal people. And then in Galatians 2, the dude gets called out for being a racist. Like, everyone struggles with this, including the apostles. So,
and you learn. And that's not to say that you have to stay there. And that's why he said it. No. If we didn't think this could get better, we wouldn't say anything. We'd be like, well, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So this is why I don't talk about the Patriots on this, because I don't know how to fix it. I don't know how to fix the thank you. I don't know how to fix the problem of the Patriots. Thank you.
I was going to say traveling in the NBA, but yes.
Yeah, that traveling in the NBA is a big one too.
Man, Twitter has some videos. It's seven steps. How do you not count? Well, he lost possession. He lost it out of his own hands. That's traveling.
Yeah, okay. So on that note, on that strong, powerful note, thank you guys so much for listening to Absurdity. I have just a couple things that I want you to know outside of the standard outro. The first of which is we're going to be doing some more interactive stuff on Facebook. So if you want to have more of a voice in what goes on in our conversations on this show, we'll be actually posting stuff ahead of our recording times and on Facebook and asking for opinions and comments so that we can get what you think and include that in our conversations, absolutely. There is always a third seat at the table in our recordings, and I want that seat to be better represented. So just pay attention, facebook.com/absurditypodcast. That's going to start soon, probably in about 2 weeks from now. Actually, potentially this week. So just pay attention to that. The other thing that I want you to know is patreon.com/absurditypodcast. If you want to support this podcast financially, that's the place to go. It does not charge you as soon as you sign up. It actually charges you at the first day of the next month or the next pay period. So just pay attention to that. If you're waiting till your next paycheck, don't worry, it won't charge you immediately. The other cool thing is you'll get ad-free episodes of this podcast, and you'll get bonus episodes if you're a $5 patron or more per month. And if you are getting bonus episodes, check this out. Patreon gives you a private RSS feed. And the reason this is so cool is you can actually, if you listen to us through iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, any of those apps, you can actually just put copy and paste that RSS feed into your app, and it will show, and the Patreon version, the ad-free version of this podcast, will show up as a regular podcast on your feed. And you can listen to that. You don't have to have the Patreon app. You don't have to go online every time or see it in your email. You get it right there where you normally listen to podcasts. So go check that out, patreon.com/absurditypodcast. Thank you guys so much for listening, for being a part of this journey. If you follow us on iTunes, please leave a rating and a review. That really helps us out. Tony, thank you for being here, for being in Chattanooga, for coming all this way.
Of course.
For a late birthday celebration for me. I appreciate you and love you, man. And I'm looking forward to the future of what's coming with Absurdity. He just hugged me across the table like air hug. So, Tony, I love you, man. I love you, listeners. Thank you for being a part of this journey with us. We'll see you next week.